Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Wandering Road Podcast. I'm your host Chris, alongside my co-host Dean, and for today's show, we're going to be talking about the interesting case of Estefania Gutierrez Lazaro, or the haunting of Estefania Gutierrez Lazaro. But before we get started with today's show, if you'd like to share your stories with us or appear as a guest on the show, we just recently had our first listener as a guest, and it was an awesome time. But if you'd like to appear on the show, please reach out to us at twroadpodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. We would love to hear your stories. And even if you want to submit your stories anonymously, and we'll dedicate an episode to your story, we're up for that as well. Again, please reach out to us at twroadpodcast@gmail.com. And with that, we'll start today's show. How you doing today, buddy?
This is going to be an interesting one, I feel, because we're kind of winging it today. We had some things lined up that fell through, and it was just one of those times or those days where things just keep going awry here and there. Like, you had a business thing to do, I had a business thing to do, the person who was going to be on, that fell through. So now we're just trying to like salvage what we can, and we came up with this topic from our list. So do you want to describe the topic?
Oh yeah, so this is an interesting one to me because there's actually a movie about it, a Spanish film called Veronica, which came out in 2017. I watched it on Netflix, and it's a really good movie. I would really recommend it. The native language is in Spanish, but you could always change the language or watch it with subtitles. So the movie itself is based off of this case of Estefania Gutierrez. So essentially, this case is a paranormal case that took place in Spain that gained attention in the early 1990s. Estefania was a young woman who reportedly experienced strange and supernatural events before her mysterious death. The story revolves around Estefania's involvement in a séance conducted at her school in Madrid. During the séance, she and some friends attempted to communicate with the deceased classmate's spirit. Following that event is when, you know, things started going crazy.
The first thing, I guess, we're trying to be better about this, but like, it's always hard to talk about stuff like this because not only is it a real life case and it involves a real life death, it's also affecting a family and a daughter and, you know, essentially what we would still consider a child, even though she was an older child. I think she passed away when she was like 17 or 18, which I still consider very, very young. But one aspect that popped out about this story that I didn't realize was the friend that died that they were trying to raise in the seance, which, by the way, they were trying to raise the seance in the school, which is interesting. We can talk about that too. But the friend that died that they were trying to reach through a seance had passed away from a motorcycle accident. And we couldn't really find more details about the nature of that friend's death. I assume that because the friend was maybe, I guess I can't speculate. I assume female. So that means, and she was younger. I assume there, you know, she probably wasn't riding the motorcycle by herself at that age. So maybe a family member or something was with her and they were involved in a crash or something. But I just think that that's the first interesting aspect of the whole story is you have a friend who died in what some would call a freak accident. And then this young girl who tried to reach her close friend, her classmate, also ended up perishing through strange, some argue paranormal circumstances. Is there anything else that jumps out about the initial part of the story to you that's interesting?
Yeah, they use the Ouija board.
Oh, there you go, man. Your favorite.
I know. So the seance that she participated in involved the use of a Ouija board. And as we know, Ouija boards are considered by many to be a tool of communicating with the spirit world. and their use is often associated with, you know, paranormal activity that comes along while you're using the board and afterward, after you're done using the board. So in her case, they believe that the seance they conducted to try to reach out to their deceased friend opened up a gateway to the supernatural that led to her being targeted by this haunting. Because it seems like, and I think it was the same thing in the movie, because I saw the movie back in 2017, it was more so her that was mainly affected. Like, it really wasn't affecting anyone else. But I wanted to get your thoughts on Ouija boards in general. I know from my perspective, I don't like them. I think that you don't know who you're talking to when you use a Ouija board. And it's one of those things where it can say that you're talking to your mom or your deceased relative or a friend, or even if you're trying to conjure up the spirit of frickin', I don't know, Elvis or something like that. it'll say like whatever you want it to say, basically, like whatever it'll do whatever to get your attention. So to me, I think they're very dangerous. If you know how to use them, you know how to use them. If you think I'm wrong, if you think we're wrong in that assessment, you know, we're very open-minded to discussion. So we'd be willing to talk to someone that has a different view on Ouija boards. But from, you know, what we know with other people that have had experiences with Ouija boards, more so negative experiences, that's why I kind of steer clear away from them. But what are your views on Ouija boards, man? I remember you telling me that your mom told you this kind of vague story of when she was younger, how she played with a Ouija board.
Yeah, let me start by saying that if you're looking for someone who's going to be a contrarian about Ouija boards, you found him, because I can't help. I don't want this to be an episode about Ouija boards, but it can probably turn into that if I let it get out of hand. The first thing I'll say about Ouija boards is it is a game created by a company, and the company, unless, I think I said this in a previous podcast, but unless the company has board members who are like witches or have some kind of ultra crazy connection to the paranormal already, and it was their intention from the beginning, it's a gimmick to take advantage of people who like to do this sort of thing to sell games or whatever. So that's the Ouija board itself to me is absolutely no different than creating your own, which apparently this girl did. They created their own Ouija board. They didn't use a legit one from like Hasbro or whatever. But that's the thing to me is, if this thing is real, which I can see that it totally could be real, you could maybe there is another side and maybe it is reachable, all that stuff. I don't think it matters that it's an actual Ouija board, or maybe it's just like a bunch of chalk marks drawn on a wall. I think that it's you, yourself, and your energy and your focus that would be the bridge connection to the other side. So intent. Yeah. I don't think I would be afraid or wary or believe that any specific Ouija board would have an attachment or make it easier to connect to the other side than anything else. Than like, I don't know, picking up a bunch of sticks and drawing a circle in the dirt. I don't think that there's any difference between the two. It's like in the same sense where you see like when you see a doll in a room with you, and maybe you believe in supernatural, or if you were in a room and you believe that sort of thing, and someone asked you, if there's one thing in this room you had to choose that freaked you out the most or might have some kind of paranormal attachment to it, what do you think it would be? I think a lot of people would say the doll, but that's because, like we were just talking about, there's this thing called pareidolia, or is that what the proper term? Yeah, pareidolia, where the brain tends to see phenomena and patterns in things that might just be random. Like you're walking, like for me, for instance, I walk around my house, I look at my carpet, I look at my laminate floors downstairs, I can point out like 20 different spots that look like a face. Some of them I could say look like evil faces staring back at me. But do I think that there's an actual like face or entity in that face? Or I mean, an actual being in that face? No, absolutely not. So that's kind of like my physical, the physical way I approach Ouija boards. The supernatural way, on the other side is I do say that it is totally possible that these kids did something, you know, connecting to the other side that might have affected her and actually ended up killing her, unfortunately.
I understand what you're saying, that it's pretty much a game and intent really matters. But not to go further down the rabbit hole about Ouija boards, because we could make that its own entire show. But real quick, the precursors of like these Ouija boards can be found in China as far back as 1100 AD in the historical documents of the Song Dynasty. The method was known as Fuji, which is translated to planchette writing. Also with Japan, there is what JJ has mentioned before. It's called Kokuri-san. So it was a divination game that was popular during the Meiji era. This game was also popular in ancient times. So here we have, like, you know, different cultures from across the world that have some sort of equivalent. But I'm not trying to knock what you're saying, that, you know, that it wasn't created as a game, because it's still sold as a game. I remember those commercials in the 90s. You remember those Ouija board commercials?
Oh, yeah.
From Hasbro? Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I actually had a Ouija board, and I probably used it like 3 times, and it was more of a novelesque thing for me to play with, like, it with, you know, my friends at a sleepover. And I think this one time, like, my best friend was at a sleepover with me, and like we busted it out, and we were like trying to communicate or whatever. And when the little, if you're not familiar with the Ouija board, it comes with like the board and the kind of diamond shaped piece that has the glass, the circle in the center that's like plastic or glass, and it's supposed to line up with the letter that. The letters that correspond with a word, like you ask a question, and then the spiritual side is supposed to, well, some people believe that it moves by itself, but really, I think what's supposed to happen is you're supposed to open yourself up to the spiritual side, and it's supposed to guide you in the movements or whatever. And I still remember to this day, I was doing it with my friend, and we asked it a stupid question. And it starts moving, and we were just sitting there like accusing each other, like one was accusing the other of moving it. And I don't remember, I was probably pushing it, we were probably both pushing it, and we were just like trying to be stupid and silly about it. But my mom had an experience where, according to her, she was at a similar kind of party years and years ago in her youth, and she said that the lights started flickering and the table started bouncing around. I don't put a lot of stock in it, because I don't know what kind of friends she had back then, or what kind of parents of the friends she had back then. But there's any number of things that could have explained someone setting the whole thing up and making it more interesting than it actually was. But I digress. I really want to touch on really quickly, taking it seriously and tying it back into the Veronica story. I think you're absolutely right. I think that if there is a communication through to the other side, whether it's Ouija board or not, there is no way that you could ever be sure that who you're talking to is actually your loved one or the person you're trying to reach. And think about it in the real world, in the modern world nowadays, with AI and fabricated voice phone calls and all that stuff. Like, we talked about this during our AI episode, like tons of episodes ago, but essentially we've reached a point in our society where if we're at a distance from each other, even if we're seeing each other on camera, as long as it's electronic or it's like a telecommunication thing, we can't be sure that who we're talking to or what we're seeing is actually what we're supposed to be like talking to or seeing or whatever. So it's the same way to me on the other side, the spiritual side. It's even worse, actually, because not only do we not know for sure if there isn't another side that we can communicate, you can never prove that. You can say that there's a demon who knows everything about your loved one after meeting them on the other side or capturing them on the other side. They can completely be mimicking them and you would never know. So that's why I don't think I would ever want to try to reach someone on the other side, no matter what the circumstances were, because I would always know in the back of my mind that I would never be able to be sure it was who I was talking to or wanting to talk to.
To segue back into this case, so Estefania and her friends, they participate in the seance, and then that's when all the weird stuff started happening. And what we're about to talk about right now gives me chills, because I've talked about this before, which the strange sounds and voices that the Gutierrez family started hearing in their home. So they would hear strange sounds and disembodied voices that were reported. These auditory phenomenon, they claim, occurred frequently and contributed to the family's belief that they were dealing with paranormal activity. Unfortunately, the sources of the sounds was never identified, but for the sake of this show, I would argue that maybe it was something paranormal. Here's a little tidbit of what would happen. The noises began coming from Estefania's room. The voices also sounded as if Estefania was calling her mother. When her parents would open the door and would walk into her room after hearing these sounds, they would realize, obviously, she wasn't there, and that there was a lot of cold air blowing inside the room, even though the window was closed. What are your thoughts on that? That gave me goosebumps because it's like, it makes me think back to stories that I've told of hearing my name being called by like voices of people that I know personally. And it's absolutely terrifying.
We've heard so many stories like this in the past, and it's always like, you know, we were never there. We don't know who what the family was like and what they might gain from fabricating. But this is a different story because we're dealing with a child who died in the process of all this, and not just died, like very clearly had some medical issues that it appears that she didn't have medical issues before this happened, which I think that honestly, this is probably one of the more intriguing cases, real life cases of paranormal activity that we've ever discussed to date on here, because if she ended up living, it's just, you could just chalk it up to like, oh, maybe it's one of those stories where the family was trying to be greedy and take advantage of the situation and make money off of it. But no, you actually had a child that ended up in the hospital with symptoms and ended up passing away from it. So for the family to keep riding that, it just seems very unlikely that they would do it solely for financial gain or for financial gain at all. So I think that I do put more stock into what they're saying or what the stories about what they're saying as being true. So all of the, and the other thing to consider too, is they seem very, very open and detailed about what they were hearing and seeing and the aspects surrounding, like you were saying, how the windows were closed. Like there should have been no circumstances in which they heard the noises that they heard or saw what they saw based off of the environment of their house at that time. So that I think that does add some chill factor to this. I would say that it would be fascinating to talk to them, but unfortunately this happened quite a while ago. So actually, come to think of it, you know, since this happened in the early 90s, if she was still alive today, she would be much older than us. She would probably be in her almost 50 by now, right? Late 40s or mid late 40s, I think.
So it's pretty crazy. I think she was born in 1973. So,
wow. Okay.
Yeah. So the movie takes place in the early 90s, but I think the actual events of this case might have been, so she was born in 1973 and died in 1991.
Mm. Yeah. So I'm assuming that, I mean, unless her parents were super young, her parents could very well be gone as well by now. But that's kind of like a little bit of a side topic. I think I do want to talk about the actual circumstances of the seance that led into these experiences though, because it sounds like what happened was she got in with a group of friends. I think you said this earlier, but she was with a group of friends. It sounds like they were in the school. They were conducting this seance and they had some strange things happen. One of their teachers came upon the seance and interrupted them as they were doing it. So they didn't really conclude the seance, but then the events started happening solely to her. Cause I think the accounts from other people, the kids who were with her, they all say that they didn't have anything happen to them after that. So it seems like if there's something that happened, it's just affixed itself to her and the family. I think in all the experiences and discussions I've had with this sort of thing, I think it seems rare that whenever someone gets an attachment through a Ouija board or something, it seems to just affect that one person. But this seems to be a story where it actually starts messing with the entire family itself. And they're like you said, they're hearing voices, they're seeing shadows in their home. Did you come across anything that to suggest how long the progression took for her medical issues to kind of surface? I wonder if it was like months or a year or whatever between the time the seance ended and she started getting really severe symptoms of seizures and hearing voices and all that sort of stuff.
So in my research, I couldn't really find exactly when her health started deteriorating. It all seemed to coincide together when they started experiencing the paranormal activity. And that's when her health started to deteriorate and she started having seizures. And in August of 1991, she unfortunately passed away. And they listed it as cardiac arrest as the cause of her death. But the circumstances of why she really died still remains unclear. So they're not really sure what happened to her. Or if I had to speculate, I would say if she was going through this type of paranormal attack, like the family was experiencing, like she was experiencing, I'm assuming she would take the brunt of it. And that would take a toll on her physically and psychologically. And maybe she probably wasn't sleeping well, and we know how important sleep is to the body. So it might have been one of those cases that it went hand in hand with one another, in the sense that, you know, she wasn't doing well. She was always living on edge because of this paranormal activity or supposed demon or poltergeist or whatever you want to call it, that her health just started to deteriorate as a result of that. But
look at you being Mr. Skeptic, man. Look at you being Mr. Skeptic. I like it. I like it.
Dude, you can't – with situations like this, they often go hand in hand, right? Because when you look at cases of possession where someone claims that they're being possessed by a demon, what's the first thing the Catholic Church is going to tell you?
Yeah, psychological.
Go get evaluated. And if they find that there's nothing wrong in your evaluation, then we know, okay, we're probably dealing with a demon.
Right.
But I wanted to touch on some of the other stuff that the family experienced. So they experienced the strange sounds and voices, but they also started to have some poltergeist activity. So according to her mother, when she would go into Estefania's room, she would be surprised to see the condition of the room. Essentially, when she would open the door, everything inside the room was scattered everywhere and nothing was in its place. At first, they thought, you know, maybe Estefania was doing it, or maybe a neighbor was coming in and doing it. And this went on for a few days. And this stuff happened before the voice stuff happened. So the poltergeist activity was a precursor to the voices. That's when it started getting scarier and scarier. So like things would go flying across the room and objects would move on its own. That's what they used to cite as evidences of the supernatural. So what are your thoughts on that?
There's a lot of things running through my head right now, and I'll try to keep it most interesting. Imagine a situation in which, so it's, if you go back to the beginning, it's not like she suddenly just, it seems like it's not like she didn't just come across the idea of talking to the other side, the Ouija board, all that stuff. Sounds like she had it in her head before that. She had an interest in that beforehand in this sort of thing. It would be interesting in a situation like this where maybe it wasn't the actual Ouija board event itself. Maybe it was a culmination of things that she had been dabbling with and trying in the house. And, you know, maybe the entity or whatever was going on, like we've talked to some people in the past where they say that the poltergeist thing is actually self-generated and it's self-induced. I think that if such a thing was true, if these events are actually happening, I think it does make sense that a child would be able to, or a younger person would be able to fabricate such thing, or not fabricate, but to generate enough energy to create or make, like we said in the past, like a tulpa event or a poltergeist or something, making these things happen that are not only, it's like, I think I just used this analogy the other day, but it's like, if you're standing in a room that's completely encased in metal or steel and you fire a bullet, you are the cause of the firing of the bullet. And you're the one who sent the projectile in whatever direction. But as soon as that bullet leaves your firearm, it's going to start ricocheting and you have no more control. You can try to move and dodge it, but you're not going to be fast enough. And if that bullet ends up going into your path and damaging or killing you, then that is something you instigated that ends up in your death. And I think that if there was cases like this, a case like this sounds like something like that is happening, but on the paranormal side. And interestingly, we were actually talking about this before we got on. We might actually do this. We'll probably do this as a topic in and of itself. But this case reminds me of like those cases you hear where there was that one famous case of that kid in the Midwest of America, like playing in like, I think the 80s or something. He was famous because he apparently was really good at this arcade game. And he loved to spend hours there every day after school, just playing this arcade game. And he ended up dying, I think, of cardiac arrest. Some people say it was from playing this game too much, but we know that that sort of thing is not commonplace. And if I had to wager a guess, I would say that there was some kind of psychological event that he was creating in himself that had a physiological event or effect on his body. And I wonder if the same thing is going on in a story, like, because she seems like she was fabricating all these ideas in her head before the Ouija board event. And then whatever happened, she brought it home or generated it at home and it translated into physical events. But unfortunately, the proverbial bullet ended up coming back and hitting her. What I still don't understand that we can talk about further is the manifestation of seizures. And I think that seizures in and of themselves, that's purely a psychological, or not a psych, sorry, not psychological. That's usually the result of a physical ailment in the brain, like a miswiring of neurons or some kind of neurological issue that makes these things happen. And I think you can actually die from a cardiac arrest if you're having a seizure. But what do you have any thoughts on anything I just brought up? I'm sorry, I kind of went down a rabbit hole again on that.
No. What you said, it makes sense to me. I don't have anything to add on that. But what I did want to add on, which I failed to mention when talking about some of the paranormal activity, apparently they would find fresh scratches on the wall. And on top of that, not only did the family experience this stuff, you could throw another curveball into it because they talked to their neighbors about it, and obviously they were worried that their neighbors wouldn't believe them. So they talked to their neighbors about it, and the neighbors said that they heard strange noises and sounds coming from the Estefania's house at night. And the neighbors saw all of the incidents that the family reported with their own eyes. Like, they invited them over one night just to experience what was going on, and they saw it as well. They heard the sounds coming from Estefania's room. They saw everything in the room being upside down and all over the place, the poltergeist activity and the cold air blowing out of the room. Even though, like, the windows closed, there would be no way, according to them, that this should be happening. So not only do we have Estefania experiencing this stuff, the family experiencing this stuff, the family is like, no one's going to freaking believe us. Let's see if our neighbors believe us. And the neighbors just like, yeah, we heard some weird shit, man. And then they're like, you want to come see? They come see, and it's like, holy crap, this is really happening.
Yeah, that definitely adds an extra degree of believability when you start bringing in external parties to the experiences. It is unfortunate that these things happened such a long time ago, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of information other than the hearsay and the stories that we find today. And of course, we can't really rely on a Hollywood movie, because if you read the thing, it's like, oh, you know, this movie is loosely based on the events of blah, 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 blah. So, like, you know,
right, absolutely.
There's some movies that are good at capturing that sort of thing, but I don't think we could probably give a lot of stock. It's probably a good movie, but probably not a lot to add to that. Yeah, I'm trying to rack my brain and think, ways to explain that, but I always go back to the whole money factor. It's just probably going to be terrible to say, but I think that even though it's a small chance, it's still a probable chance, or not probable, a possible chance that maybe she had some medical issues that the family was aware of that they kind of kept secret for a while, and it just kept getting worse. And maybe they thought that this was a way to take advantage of a situation and try to get some attention and maybe get some money to help her. But again, I mean, even if that is the case, it would be a sad case and it would be understandable. I mean, I don't think that's one of those cases where if someone was like lying out just to get money, I mean, I guess I can understand you're trying to save your child. You would want to do that. But that is such a small possibility. I think it's still worth mentioning as a possibility, but I think more likely than not, something was going on outside of their control. And as their life kind of just spiraled, I wish we could find out where this happened in Spain, right?
Yeah, it happened in Spain.
Is there an address associated with it? Or
No, not that I saw, but I think it might have been in Madrid.
Because it sounds like the stories that, you know, they keep referencing their house. So I imagine they didn't have like an apartment, but they were close enough to other people where they, you know, could live and share a closer space with other people.
To add more to the paranormal happenings that this poor family encountered and that Estefania had to deal with, apparently witnesses to all of this stuff claim to have seen shadowy figures or entities in the house. These apparitions were described as dark and distinct shapes that moved in a way that was not easily explained.
I'm actually looking at some photos. They seem to be legit. I mean, actually, I take that back. I don't want to say photos. I don't want to make it sound like there's a ton of them. But there's one photo, if you Google her case, it looks like at first I thought it was a photo of the Virgin Mary, but I think it's a photo of her. And it looks like it was shredded and there's a hole punctured through the center, like through the glass frame, through the photo itself, and kind of ripped to shreds. And it's honestly, man, I have to say that is an intriguing kind of damage. You see, if you're listening to this, I recommend pulling up the photo. You could probably recognize it right away. It's a gold metal frame. It's a normal, it's like a standard size picture frame. And it looks like it had a photo of her in the center, just, you know, like a typical high school photo, smiling portrait or whatever. But there's a large puncture towards the bottom left of the photo, kind of getting into the center. But the most intriguing thing about that damage is it seems stripped towards the top. So I would think that if like a bullet or a fist or something went through that photo, it wouldn't have created those rips and shreds towards the top. It's almost like something came down and scratched it and then punctured a hole through it as it was scratching it. That's pretty creepy. And I'm not sure about this. I see you shaking your head, Chris. You're looking at the same photo. Does it or doesn't look like there's a burn on the top of the frame? Is that a burn mark or is that just the frame itself?
I'm glad you brought that up because that was something I was going to mention anyway. That one day when her mom goes into her room, she sees the picture of Jesus in the room upside down on the wall. And then that exact photo was laying on the ground right under it. So according to her mother, her mom says that she picked up the picture, and as soon as she picked it up, she dropped it back on the floor. And her father was there with the mother, and at first didn't understand why his wife just, like, you know, tossed the picture back on the ground. He goes to pick it up and he's like completely fucking terrified because why? The picture starts to burn on its own. So according to them, like, they pick up the picture, it starts to burn, they toss it back on the ground, and they just leave the room. So that's what their claim is, that the picture caught on fire itself.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the photo and there is a tiny, tiny red flag about that, I suppose. The first red flag that makes it seem like that couldn't have happened the way they explained it is because if it was lying on the ground and they picked it up, I guess if they picked it up and then it caught fire, but it seems like if it caught fire immediately when they picked it up and they dropped it immediately, then the flames would have kept flowing upward or like straight up away from the photo. But the burn mark is as if someone had lit it on fire, holding it straight up. So either they were holding it for quite a while it was on fire, because I think it would take a good minute or two to discolor that frame as a flame was touching it. I imagine no one who was holding a photo that caught fire like spontaneously would hold it for more than a couple minutes or hold it for that long. Yeah, that's just the first thing that popped in my head is like, if you had that on fire, then the flame should have risen up to that at that angle. And then the other thing too is if the flame rose up at that angle, if you notice in the photo, it doesn't seem like there were scorch marks leading from the center of the photo up to that part of the frame that was burnt. So it's almost like there were two different burn areas, like someone burnt the bottom of the picture, but then also focused on burning the frame.
Right.
Like two different flames. And I don't know if you noticed this, man, but if you look on for photos in Google, there seem to be two different types of photos that were burned. Like they look similar. It's the same picture of her, but there's one that looks more shredded with the frame. And then there's another one that looks more like it's just a puncture hole. And I think they look like two separate portraits. But that's just another minor point. I think what's more intriguing is how the burn actually happened on the photo.
Oh yeah. That's kind of a curious one to me. And I'm glad you pointed that out. Cause when I looked at the photo, I just looked at it as a reference to what their claim was. I'm like, oh, okay, they said the photo burned. I see a burnt photo. So I'm glad you really picked up on that. So
my analyst brain kicking into overdrive.
I know. It's still pretty early for you over there. What I found interesting, before I go into when police actually get involved in this situation, was that psychic phenomenon. Apparently there's claims that Estefania, after the seance, exhibited psychic abilities, and some accounts mention her experiencing vision or premonitions. So this interesting thing about psychic phenomenon. So aside from the physical manifestations of the haunting that the family experienced, apparently Estefania was said to have exhibited psychic abilities. Some accounts mention her experiencing visions or premonitions. I mean, this adds an extra layer of mystery to the case, because I don't know how valid that is. Because again, I'm the one being skeptical. Was she really having visions, or was she having hallucinations? Because, you know, she potentially had a medical condition that wasn't disclosed.
Right. Yeah, I think that that's probably something that. And we talked about this in previous podcasts. It's like, if you have a ghost or a paranormal poltergeist or whatever, like, they must be aware of the person, at least even if the person is giving off energy. Like, maybe the poltergeist doesn't really understand how things work, our existence with like health issues or whatever. Maybe they just are attracted to negative energy. But I feel like if someone has health issues that are building, and the stress and rumination on that naturally might incline something to attach itself or be more attached or interested in that particular person. So if she actually is having physical ailments affecting her neurologically that are leading to the seizures, then I think it's possible that whatever was interested in her wanted her even more, because they knew that she was giving off that kind of negative energy to begin with, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that definitely does make sense to me. And one thing that I really wanted to get into was that police get involved in this story. So the family thought about leaving the house because of all these incidents, and they weren't stopping, and how many nights they would spend in fear. But
right.
The family called the police when this one incident apparently happened to Estefania's mother. Apparently she was sleeping, and then she felt someone sitting on her chest was strangling her. Somehow she was able to escape the grasp. Obviously this might have been a bout of sleep paralysis or something of that sort. So after this incident, the family called the police that same night. The police reached the house shortly after the phone call. And when they got there, they saw that the family was really scared, and they asked, like, hey, what's going on? Why don't you tell us everything? So when the police went into the house, they said that the house had a very strange feeling. They said that it felt cold inside the house, and then they heard voices. They asked if there was anyone else in the house. The family said, no, there's no one else in the house, but these voices have been happening, you know, for months. So the family disclosed the entire story, And after disclosing the story of what happened to them with the poltergeist activity and whatnot, the police wanted to see the room, Estefania's room. So they go to Estefania's room. All the pictures were upside down. All things in the room were scattered. And suddenly a strong wind started blowing in the room. So here's the catch. The window was closed. The police go to open the window and there's no wind outside. Yeah. So it's one of those things that it's like, okay, so here we have the neighbors involved. We have the initial family involved. And we have actual credible people in law enforcement involved saying, like, what the F? There's what is going on?
Yeah, I would be so fascinated to see the police reports or whatever that might still exist from that time. I imagine they're not going to be around anymore. Or even if they were, we would no way to get a hold of them. But like, so yeah, that's probably another really interesting aspect of the story that has to be mentioned, the law enforcement. I think I'm glad you brought it up. It's very important to consider. I mean, according to the accounts, like you were saying, they were there to respond to something they weren't even expecting. Like they didn't expect anything to. And I imagine if you walk into a room and you just see photos like upside down, unless they were like floating in midair, that's one thing. But if they were just upside down, it's like, okay, someone just turned all the pictures upside down in this room. But then they start talking about feeling alterations in the environment around them. And it sounds like they were smart enough to check to see what the source of the wind was. And there was no wind outside. There was nothing inside the house that appeared to be creating the wind. I've actually never heard of paranormal stories like this generating wind inside a room. Maybe you have. I don't know. You can talk about that. But like I think that's particularly unique to this story is usually it's like just sounds or things shaking, like almost mimicking an earthquake or whatever. But I've never heard of a strong wind coming from inside a room when someone is reporting paranormal activity. Have you ever heard anything like that?
No, I can't say I've heard anything about wind blowing. I've heard about cold spots and, you know, just entire rooms going completely cold. No, that's new to me about actual wind blowing. You know, what's interesting is that according to this case or story, that the cops ended up staying overnight at the residence. And then everything that the family talked about saying like, hey, this is what we experienced. They get to experience it firsthand. They experience it firsthand. And apparently it's written in the police report. And then that's when the media, you know, got a hold of this. This became a topic of discussion. There was a lot of investigation. With the investigations, they couldn't really find much. They couldn't really determine whether, you know, this was paranormal or whether they were hoaxing the whole thing. Right. And what's interesting about it is that there's so much secrecy surrounding the case that the family themselves, they're known to be secretive about the details of the case, and they were reluctant to share further experiences with investigators. So this adds an element of mystery and speculation. And people were wondering, like, hey, did something happen that contributed to the haunting? Or was there some hoaxing going on to mask, I don't know, their daughter's condition? Or like you said before, trying to get attention to hopefully get money to help with the situation? Who really knows?
Revisiting the concept that I brought up earlier is, you know, like the fact that this could be a money grab, an unfortunate money grab to do something to help their daughter. Could also, like, I hate to bring it up because it's so dark and terrible, but there are some stories, there's plenty of accounts of stories like stuff like Munchausen by proxy or Munchausen or whatever, where you like, I think that's where you keep someone near you sick or you keep yourself sick or something. And I think it's someone keeps you sick because they have the psychological need to be the caretaker. It's not necessarily that you want to hurt them. It's just they need to feel that pleasure or that need to take care of somebody, to be there for them. So they keep them sick and they feed them like trace amounts of harmful chemicals or poisons or whatever. And I'm thinking, like, I guess it's possible. I don't want to speculate because who wants to speculate about someone harming their own child? But I guess it's possible that the symptoms that she experienced could have been partially or completely fabricated by her her family slipping her something, or maybe she was doing something to herself that they didn't want to reveal. But I guess if that was the case, though, once she passed away, and you know, in Spain in the 90s, I assume that they were pretty on par with other medical communities, especially it sounds like they were in, I think based off what I just looked at, they were in South Madrid. So they were in a pretty built up area of Spain, even for the 90s. I'm sure they had really good medical care and structure and all that stuff. So they probably would have done an autopsy on her, and they probably would have found chemicals or, you know, things that would have caused her death that were mysterious. But I think all like you said, all they found was indications that she had seizures and then cardiac arrest. So I guess it's hard to say whether or not her family could have possibly fabricated that those symptoms without actually having that stuff show up in an autopsy report. So maybe it's more likely than not, if they had some in on it, maybe they're just taking advantage of the situation to maybe help her medical condition or something like that. That's just my perspective.
You know, what's interesting, I did some more digging, and you know, it's with things like this, it's, you find so many articles and opinion pieces and whatnot. There is a piece of work that I found that apparently covers the case. And I feel like I have to share this because this person claims that they actually have a direct quote from one of the police inspectors named Jose Pedro Negri. And apparently this is a direct quote from him. When I'd first entered the room, I noticed they had a large wooden crucifix on the wall, and hanging off of it was a smaller pearly crucifix like the one children get at their first Holy Communions. There was also a poster, but a few moments later, the crucifix had been turned upside down, the little crucifix was on the floor, and the poster and the door had three or four deep scratches in them, as if someone had clawed through the poster and deep into the door. So I don't know, you know, about the validity of that, but I figured I'd share that just to get your perspective.
Did he say that he witnessed the scratches forming in front of him, or did he just notice that they had scratches on them? Does it sound like it was one or the other?
It looks like the scratches were already there.
Okay. But based off of his account, and I apologize if I didn't catch on to this, but it sounds like he witnessed the crucifix turning upside down on its own, right? Because he said he first walked in the room and he noticed the cross on the wall with a smaller, and then before he knew it, it flipped upside down. So he's saying he saw the actual movement event.
Yeah, he said that he actually saw that. Yeah, and apparently some of the inspectors had to leave due to feelings of sickness while inside the house. And apparently, so this is conflicting from what I found before about the picture, that the police also witnessed the photo catching fire in its frame.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I guess, yeah, that's, man, that's a hard one when you start introducing multiple accounts from different people outside the home, especially like law enforcement or something. I mean, I could sit here and speculate and think about all kinds of crazy crap that could be going on to explain that. But I'm not going to do that because it'd be so silly to just speculate possibilities against it. I guess we could just end this one on saying this is probably one of the creepier true life stories we've ever done, because you have multiple accounts from different perspectives. You also have some photo evidence to back it up. And you also have the fact that there was a friend who died on a motorcycle accident, and this girl really did know that person, and this girl really did engage in some kind of effort to talk to their side. And she really went on to have physical symptoms of seizure and eventual cardiac arrest and death. I guess whenever you introduce a case like this and there's an eventual death, especially close to the family, and especially when it's the death of a child or a young person who's directly related to the family, who's trying to tell their story, I think that ups the likelihood of this case having some kind of validity to it.
Yeah. And to wrap it up, apparently, even after Estefania passed away in 1991, they still experienced hauntings, and the hauntings stopped when they moved out and the family relocated. But what's interesting is that the same location where they used to live, there haven't been any reports of hauntings. ever since they left. So I'm in the same boat as you, man. I feel like there's probably some paranormal stuff going on, but there also might be a medical side to it.
Right.
Because there is always a possibility that she could have been suffering from like schizophrenia or something of that sort. So it might have been a combination of the two. But what are your final thoughts? You believe this story, or you think there was something more going on?
I mean, traditionally I'm a skeptic on all these things until I get more information. But I would say if I had to choose a small batch of stories we've talked about as being probable of including some kind of, and like we said earlier, it doesn't have to necessarily be purely external paranormal forces. It could be like some people will suggest that poltergeists, like we said, are fabricated from the person themselves. And like, but then again, you just said that there continued to be, they claimed that there continued to be occurrences of paranormal activity after the girl passed away. I would say just for the fact that there are documented, reported, or serialized, captured accounts that are supposedly coming from inspectors, law enforcement. I mean, I guess the, you know, degrees of separation, you'd have to like look up and you'd have to actually see the document, because we're just reading these we're just reading these quotes or whatever from the law enforcement, but reading them through other people who we don't know where they got their sources or information or whatever from. So, but I still think that if there really are connections to law enforcement making these or claiming these accounts with the things that they saw, and also the fact that there's photo evidence, if I had to pick, I would say that this is one of the ones that I would be more, at least more open to the concept of the idea that this could be a real case.
I am in the same camp. Well, I think some things might be exaggerated because, you know, once it gets into the public, that's just how it is.
Yeah.
But I think the fact that law enforcement got involved and they witnessed this stuff themselves, I think that gives some validity to what was going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm in the same camp of all the stories that we've covered and cases that we've covered. This is one of those that's on the more believable side of the spectrum. Thanks for tuning into today's episode of The Wandering Road. You can find us on Apple, Google, Spotify, and most podcast platforms. Be sure to subscribe and share. Also, don't forget to give a follow on Instagram at @twroadpodcast and follow my TikTok at @twrpodcast. Take care, and I'll catch you on the next one.